You're listening to Winning at Life. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Good morning, James.
Hey, Gregory.
The number of publicly listed companies traded on the exchange has dropped from a peak of 8,090 in 1996 to 4,397 today.
It's almost dropped by half.
Yeah, that's something, isn't it? Really is. Goes back to what I always talk about when we're buying stocks and going back to most impact is there's about 1,000 companies that's important to us from the exchanges. And I always say, give you this phrase that we're all buying from the same small pool of stocks there. So really important. I think less than 1,000 stocks make up 97% of market cap, and less than 100 companies make up 50% of that. So just some crazy numbers when you think about it, that we're all kind of sharing in that same pool. And that's one reason, because of historicals, because of those stats right there from historical numbers, also is why I am a fan of index type of investing versus trying to select those stocks at the right time or to be able to hang in there with them. And I'll go back to one that we have not been a fan of this year. And it's a Tesla. And what did it close at yesterday?
Is 1,400, I think it was, is what it was.
Yeah, shares of the car maker have risen 269% this year.
1,544 is where it closed yesterday.
Yeah, and then we had talked about some of the richer guys.
They changed the billionaire list halfway through the week because Warren Buffett made a $2.9 billion donation, and they're also doing some share buybacks over at Berkshire Hathaway. So both of those kind of brought his wealth down. They rearranged the list. He's now like sixth or seventh. He fell down past the...
Well, hold up. But we did this on July the 9th, I'm seeing the date here of where you printed this, and we covered that. Now go ahead.
Yeah, that was on Thursday's show. So it's the classic top of the tier has been... It was Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, Warren Buffett have been up there, and then it's been kind of a race for number four. Well, that's long gone. Jeff Bezos is number one by a country mile. Zuckerberg's still up there, but you saw the Louis Vuitton guy jump to, what is he, fourth now? And then the two Google guys jumped to fifth and sixth, and now Warren Buffett, seventh. And then after we reported on Thursday, it changed yesterday.
Yeah, Elon Musk, his value rose $6.1 billion on Friday, according to Bloomberg Billionaires Index.
Wait. How much billion did he make in one day?
$6.1 billion.
That's strong. That's a good day. That's a good return for a day.
See, the 49-year-old owns about a fifth of Tesla's outstanding stock, which comprises the bulk of his $70.5 billion fortune. He has majority ownership of closely held SpaceX. You know, that little company he has accounts for about $15 billion of his wealth. And as I had mentioned, 269% increase in the stock value of this company. And
that's since January 1st, right?
Yeah.
Because in this Reuters write down this morning, they said Tesla shares since July 1st, since the close on July 1st, is up 38%. And if you go year over year, if you look at where it was this time last year, it's up right at 500%.
He commented on Friday, "We are in irrational exuberance. This is a bubble," he said Friday in a Bloomberg television interview. "The economy is grinding, slowing down. We're lurching in and out of COVID, yet the tech market makes new highs every day. It's a classic speculative bubble." That's quoting Elon Musk. And I want to give you a little bit more breakdown here on what's going on with his wealth. And essentially, they're basically saying he, in reach of a payday potentially worth $1.8 billion, his second jackpot from the electric car company car maker in about 2 months. Let's see, hitting a six-month average of market capitalization of $150 billion would trigger the vesting of the second of 12 tranches of options granted to the billionaire to buy Tesla stock as a part of his 2018 pay package. In early May, Musk's first tranche vested after 6 month average stock market value reached $100 billion. So we were talking about company stock options and all on one of the weeknight shows this week. And so this kind of falls in right behind that. Musk's already achieved targets related to Tesla's financial growth that are also required in order to vest the approaching option tranches. Each tranche gives Musk the option to buy 1.69 million Tesla shares at $350.02 each.
Oh, that's a deal under these circumstances, Gregory.
Well, yeah. And a year ago, where was that stock at? 2 years ago, it was like question, are they going to survive? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he couldn't, you know, get the stock to hit certain marks. And now, let's see, what did it close at, $1,397 yesterday?
No, $1,544.
Okay. Well,
even higher.
Okay. So in this article, a couple of days old, but $350.02 each. And basically, you buy that, and you spend $350, and it turns into $1,500. So theoretically, he'd be able to sell shares related to the tranche that vested in May and the upcoming tranche for a combined profit of over $3.5 billion. Or every tranche he's getting at current prices is worth $1.8 billion. His first tranche was worth $700 million in May. And when it vested, it has since increased along with Tesla's stock price. Tesla surged over 500% in the past year as the company increased sales of the Model 3 sedan. Just crazy stuff when you get a deal like that. Like, geez.
These are the stories that cause people to get excited about jumping in on the next big thing. They find out if they'd have jumped in on this stock a year ago, they'd have a 500% return. And they need that return, Gregory. They go look at their CDs. They go look at other more safe products. And they're not getting – the yield's just not there like it was in the past. And so there's a hint of desperation around a bubble like this, a tech bubble like this. But this is the reason why people get excited about that. They need to make up some ground. They need that return. They hear stories like this. They think they can pick the next Tesla. And people get burned.
Well, yeah, if you're – chasing return, and what you have to think of is relative to your risk. And this is very high priced compared to where it was a year ago. It's unbelievable. But when you're taking risk, you should only put the portion of money to risk that you could tolerate it going the wrong direction. Or extreme risk is think of it, you know, can you tolerate losing that money? If you think of your portfolio, say you have and just to make the math simple, if you have $1 million invested and it moves down 10%, that's $100K that went away. It could be permanently gone or it could be temporary because the market moves around. But is that something you can tolerate? I had a conversation recently with a gentleman that's looking to put some more money to work. And he says, this is kind of short-term money, meaning he's needing it in less than a year. But he says, you know, I would just like to get some more yield on it. And I said, and he was speaking of stocks. And I said, but you know, it could be worth less in 6 months when you're needing it, if that's your timeline. So you have to keep that in mind with what you're doing there if you're wanting to take risk. And you call it short-term money, and short-term money does not have much yield. But that's where they kind of say, well, I want it to make some money, but I am going to need it. Those two things do not quite mesh there. So if you're going to reach for more return and use risk in doing so, you need to be able to understand and withstand it going down in value and being less when you're needing it for whatever that purpose is down the road. How about this? As of June 30th of this year, the total return of the S&P 500 is 7.5% for the trailing 1 year, up 10.7% per year for the last 3 years, up 10.7% per year for the last 5 years, and up 14% per year for the last 10 years. Remember, the S&P 500 consists of 500 stocks chosen for market size, liquidity, and industry group representation.
Pretty close to back to normal if you look at the stock market.
Yeah, and considering what went on, and yeah, it got really ugly, and people make bad decisions with volatility. And if you go, and I go back to Elon Musk and his company and others like that over history, is just like, let's switch gears to something that has been somewhat more consistent but had ridiculous growth. Netflix.
Okay.
You know, and once again, would you have hung in there? And it's above $500 a share now. But would you have hung in there? Because a year ago, they were all saying Netflix is all but dead, you know, because of all the other streaming services. It's doomed. And the stock pulled back. So is that time? Would you like bailed on it? Said, no, I'm going to hang in there. Or we use another example of Apple, which Buffett, we just saw in release of information, basically majority of his company's stock that they hold is Apple stock. And he said, we look at, and he holds some over 90 billion worth of Apple stock, the largest single stock holding outside of all the other stuff they hold, which they own companies, Berkshire Hathaway. And he said, first, he thinks it's the best company on the planet. And he said, we look at Apple like any other company we own. We look at Apple as a company we own, is how he looks at it there. Now, you go look at the history of that stock, and it's been all over the place there compared to, of course, where it is today. So I'm just saying, so you've got to make these decisions on hanging in there, the market. And we know in mid-March there, it was pretty bleak. And then the market has came back. You can make adjustments, but do you want to completely leave that space? And it depends on your tolerance for movement. And March of this year tested everybody's tolerance to how do you handle this when it's coming. And once again, I go back to you should be blended. You should have diversification, not just in stocks, but in asset classes as well to get through that so you're not wounded. And if you're looking at stocks as your only source of investment and using that to generate income, it's going to get painful at times. I tell you what, I enjoyed that. I appreciated Mosquito Joe yesterday evening setting out on the front lawn in the swing and I don't have to worry about those nasty little mosquitoes, and it's just kind of a cool thing. But I notice more effect than just mosquitoes not bothering me. You know, some of these other nuisance bugs, they're just not around. And if you'd like to find out more about Mosquito Joe, New Orleans area, it's neworleans.mosquitojoe.com. The phone number is 504-208-2361. And tell Terry and the rest of his team, Gregory sent you.
That'd be nice. And when I talk to the Mosquito Joe guys, they say there's a lot of people who do it for their pets. They have dogs mostly, but, you know, cats or whatever you have run around in the backyard. It keeps them from getting ate up with fleas and ticks, and mosquitoes bother them too.
Yeah, you really don't want mosquitoes biting your pets.
And then
either.
And then what do they do? As soon as they pick it up outside, they bring it right inside. And so it's real big for pet owners, big time. MosquitoJoe.com.
And look, by the way, I don't use it just during the summer, year round treatment.
Gregory, so
go ahead.
We've noted how bad theaters are doing in 2020. It was already an industry that was hurting because of so many other entertainment options. It had seem to be on a decline, or at least have significant headwinds for a couple decades leading into this. But saw a stat this morning that year to date, not just last month or last weekend or whatever, year to date, theater ticket sales are down 97%. That means of all the revenue movie tickets have brought in, they've only brought in 3% as much as they did at this point last year. That is the scariest stat I've heard thus far. I'm laughing because it's frightening. 97% decline in revenue for theaters? My goodness. So AMC, how are they going to survive? They have they made a new deal with their bondholders. Their junior bondholders are owed $1.6 billion in debt. They got to be sweating over that. But they agreed to swap their debt at a discount, 73 cents on a dollar. And some of the debt holders are going to lend AMC another $200 million. This was a regulatory filing from yesterday. So, yeah.
That's tough. And it doesn't look good for them in the near future, putting people in seats.
So if you're a debt holder, why do you make that deal?
Do you want to throw a little bit more in to help them survive? Or would you just rather let's write it all off because that's what your option is? Can we make this work? And you have to have faith that this is coming back. This isn't a forever deal, this pandemic. This pandemic, as all of them, history-wise, have cycled through. And I do think we have help coming.
I would just be so scared to put money in a movie theater, but I am thinking I have what's called recency bias, where I think the way things are going right now is the way things are always going to be. And you're right, a year from now, or whenever this whole pandemic thing is done.
A few years from now, this will be a forgotten thing. People would go back to
buffets,
doing everything. Well, I don't know about buffets, but people will be getting together, going to concerts, ball games, and all this stuff be going on, getting together in bars. You'll see packed places again, and people won't be thinking anything about it because this is what people do. But it will kind of be forgotten. And yeah, and the jetliners will be flying everywhere again, packed, and things will get back to normal. But 2020 is a tough year, and we've got months to go. I'm expecting a vaccine. Some of the studies are moving into stage 3, which is the final one, which is the biggest deal of them all. But let's say they move through that, get approval, they've been manufacturing. It's still going to take months for most of the population to be vaccinated, which either through getting it and getting COVID and getting well, which builds antibodies. And I guess some population might have a built-in immunity. I don't know, hadn't heard about that, but it seems like there's always some. And then the vaccine creates the herd immunity there. So then we can see getting back to normal somewhere early in 2021. Now, when the markets see this, and we the markets have optimism and have shown that by going up because it says, okay, people are going back to work. Things are getting to normal. Now we're having the summer shakeup for the summer wave of it. But what the market's seeing that, yeah, people are going back to work. Things are improving. There's still going to be pain. But what you're also going to see the market price in is if a vaccine gets close or news comes out, they're going to be pricing in that 2021 is going to be a pretty good year. And you're going to see the market start pricing that in. And we could see possibly, and I'll be subject to political effect going on this fall.
November 4th, right?
Yeah, there is elections coming. So with that said, you could have some effect on the market by what happens there. But the market's going to like the idea of 2021 no matter what. 45%, this was from Gallup poll, 45% of Americans surveyed in May of this year have living wills in place. And by the way, for everybody listening, living wills document an individual's end-of-life medical care wishes in case he or she loses the ability to communicate. 45%.
Are you disappointed in that number, Wes?
Yes, frankly. It's not a very difficult document to obtain. Not a very difficult document to understand, but it's a highly personal decision. It's rare that we have a conversation with someone who walks in the office, discuss the document and what it does, and they don't have an immediate reaction one way or the other about how they want things to go. And so when you're that decisive on a topic, you know, it kind of screams at you a little bit that, hey, maybe I ought to get this down in writing just once. And it's good forever. So I think it's something to keep in mind. Frankly, a lot of doctor's offices will offer them to you. It's a very standard, you know, you can't manipulate the language.
If you describe, what is this typically, a couple pages?
No, one page usually.
One page really? Document.
Yeah, one page. I mean,
didn't I do one? How long was mine? Was mine one page?
Yours is a little longer, and our firm's is a little longer, but we have additional options in there about donation for organs and continuation on food and water and pain medication. Those are the things you're going to get the kind of bells and whistles that you wouldn't get with a standard one that's offered at a hospital. But again, if you have very basic preferences, you can at least get it out of the way and then tweak it down the road. But again, it's something that you want to have if you have such a decisive preference on it.
You hear that, Gregory? I got a special one.
Hey, and I have a lot of thoughts about it, as you know, because we've talked about this before, and you and I, Wes, have talked about it one-on-one. But you know what I see in people that don't, and let's just say they have a few kids, because I've seen these scenarios throughout my extended family also that plays out, that, you know, well, such, and we'll call her Alice. Alice will take care of the decisions, and everybody knows she kind of handles that type of stuff, and we converse with her, and they'll give it to Alice. And it's not put in writing, but, you know, do not take, and give an example would be, don't take extreme measures to keep me alive. If I'm no longer wanting to eat and drink, don't force me and don't hook me up to any machines and stuff. And say, okay, Mom, I understand. And then when it comes that time, and you're also thinking, and everybody's on board, and they'll go along with what Alice decides, and what I see most often is they're not on the same page, and you could have the other two push back. And then, and let's say they are, you're putting a tremendous emotional decision on that where they know what you wished, but they're going to say, you know what? She's got more time. Let's feed her. Let's keep her going. I don't want to let go. So, and that's why I think it's important to be in writing so you have clarity and they have something to push back. Because I had a situation with a family member years ago that I kind of like knew it. It was verbal and they were trying to feed the mother, force feed, you know, the tube and whole stuff. And she was fighting it. And I said, you might want to step back a little bit and think about what you're doing. And later that day they stopped it and kind of the realization, this is the wind down. I know I can go on and on, but see, this is the things why people need those documents. And I think even though it's simple, but it's clarity.
Yeah. And I think you make a very good point, and it's a benefit of that document that is sort of secondary when you think about you putting your own preference down. The reality is it serves as this sort of burden relief for the decision makers at the end of your life. And rather than making a decision, they're following your directions. They're following your orders and your wishes. And that is a completely different mindset to be in such a turbulent time, right? So if you're just saying, look, we're honoring Mom, we're honoring Dad, we're doing what they're telling us to do, that I think goes over a lot easier and goes down a lot easier, as opposed to finding, you know, some common ground between siblings and trying to make a decision as to what you think would be in the best interest of the parents. And that doesn't always work out the way you might think.
Another part of doing wills, the living will and other documents and the splitting up of property and stuff, I think ultimately I want the kids to get along when I'm done. I would rather them be mad at me on how I chose to do it than mad at each other by having clarity, whether it's health or splitting up the assets.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that's one of the things that is sort of peace of mind for everyone. Getting a will together is the hallmark of an estate plan for that very reason, because you're giving everybody an idea of how you want things to go, you know, and it's going to hold up. It's going to hold water. And so there's no guesswork there. There's no hard feelings.
I'm going to take this a step further when we're coming up on a break. But when we come back, I want to go down this road to where we're probably talking about married couples with kids. But what if we have a situation where you're in a relationship, but you're not married? How does that fall? And would this help?
Uh-oh. So we're talking about some of the, what's the classification of that paperwork, your DNR and your stuff? The living will? Yeah, the living will. Thank you. So
it's a DNR document. Is that what you have, James?
Do not resuscitate.
Do not resuscitate.
And if they hook me up to any machine, just walk by and accidentally kick the plug out the wall, please. That's what my DNR says. Not really. But Gregory threw in a complication right before we walked into the commercial break. What happens if the couple's not married? What if you're just boyfriend and girlfriend or living, kind of cohabitating, common law married? Does it change any?
Yeah.
Well, go back. You brought up common law, and I think there's a misconception about that, too. So be careful. People think that's actually like a real thing that happens with time.
Yeah, not in Louisiana, at least. That is something that's certainly a misconception. It comes up every so often. But, you know, I think for the most part, people kind of understand maybe it's a bit of a myth. From what I understand, it works elsewhere, but it's not the law in Louisiana. You're either married or you're not.
Oh, wow. See, now I'm from Texas, and that's common law is kind of an accepted thing where I know several people who are you married? Well, we're common law married. Okay, well, that counts. You got rings and everything. You live together for, what is it, 7 years or whatever.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, there's just some sort of trigger that pulls that you can basically consider yourself married.
Okay, so call it your common law husband dies, you're the common law wife, you've got kids from the first marriage, does the common law wife get the money? No. I know we're going off on another tent.
Wow.
That's some crazy stuff, but let's get back. So the couple, and I don't call it boyfriend and girlfriend, they're a tight couple. They've been together. They probably had previous marriages or not, but they're kind of like, I'm not into the marrying thing, but I'm committed to you and you're committed to me. And the dude is out on his Harley, gets in an accident. He's in the hospital. In COVID times, they don't let people in unless you're family or immediate. If they let somebody in, and they're sure not going to tell you not what's going on, oh, we're common law, or we've been together for 10 years, or it could be 2 years. You might need some documents. Is a living what we were talking about here is the living will. Is there something else that's needed besides that? Would that get it done, or is this just end of life versus, hey, I take care of him?
Right.
Type conversation.
I think what you're kind of getting at there is powers of attorney. Those are going to be the documents that help out someone in that particular situation. If there's proof that they're married, you're really not going to run into too many problems, certainly not at the hospital itself. But if there's no proof or you're not married, then, yeah, you might have a little static when you need it the least. So having that document is going to come in handy, not only for access, but also for ease of mind as well, to know that you don't have, you know, your brother or sister that you hadn't spoken to in 10 years making these decisions for you simply because the person that, you know, you've been in a relationship with for a decade doesn't have the proper paperwork to do what's best on your behalf. So it's kind of a crazy thing to think about. But, I mean, we've seen it recently, you know, and you can make up hypotheticals that actually don't sound all that crazy. You know, a motorcycle accident doesn't sound too crazy. A car accident doesn't sound too crazy.
Yeah, I saw in the paper yesterday a lady not north of here killed on a motorcycle accident. She's in her 50s, killed in a motorcycle accident. It does happen.
It does.
Not often, but it does.
It could be. Look, we're sitting here. We have the TV on behind us, and I'm watching a guy clean leaves out of a gutter. What if he falls off the ladder? I mean, it's something that simple.
And he's living with his girlfriend, but they're not technically married, so they wouldn't even let her into the emergency room, would they? Or
well, that I don't know. I mean, the protocols at the hospital are going to govern how that goes, but I think she would have a rough time potentially trying to convince medical professionals that she's the one making decisions while he's incapacitated.
Exactly. You know, and COVID times has made this worse. Are Stacy's my wife. Emily's our daughter. And Emily says, hey, can you go to, she's had to go for a checkup yesterday. And she says, well, Mom, come on with me. She says, sure, I'll go. No big deal. And then about 15 minutes later, Stacy calls me and they wouldn't let me in. I said, yeah, you know they're not letting you in. I thought there was some exception for you, or you knew that. This is a surprise. How? So just think about that. That's mom and daughter, and mom can't go in. And of course, daughter's not a minor, but it's just you think this is 2019. This is 2020. But then we think of these scenarios. Everything's good until something goes wrong. You know, James Parker is famous for it never happens to me. Well, looks like James somehow is documented up because it might could happen to him. And that's the situation. What if somebody gets sick, can't make financial decisions? So many things can happen depending on how the relationship, whether it's a marriage or been together for 5 years or a business relationship, all these different things.
Yeah. And you just never really know. It's sort of the, you know, unpredictable nature of the life we live, I guess. But, you know, that it just goes back to what estate planning is. It's just about having a plan. It's not something that you have to carry around in your pocket at all times. It's having a plan in place so that life can happen, so that you can go about your daily life knowing that if something unpredictable happens to me, that's okay too. I've got a plan for that already. We took care of that a few years ago. And I think there's a lot to be said for it. Again, you know, when we work with our clients come in and we do our best to have a flat fee schedule if we can for them. And that flat fee includes lifetime adjustments for free. So they can be as flexible as they want with their documents. And I think life changes as you change. And so you ought to be able to come in and make those adjustments accordingly.
504-260-0995. If you have a question for Wes Blanchard regarding getting documented up, or, you know, we can talk about money as well. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. That's Wes Blanchard and James Parker.
All right. I'm going to be a caller real quick. I got a question. Where are the boundaries on all these different little documents that you talked about? Because, like, is the DNR, the do not resuscitate, is that part of your living will? And if the living will covers this, but you need a power of attorney to cover that, like, where do I need it and where are the boundaries?
Sure. So a DNR is really an element of your living will. A DNR is an entry on a medical sheet that says, look, if I'm heading out and I can't breathe and, you know, you're needing to give me CPR, do not do that. If you're needing to put me on a machine, do not do that. The living will is a little more expansive than that. It covers a bit broader stroke on end-of-life care as well. When you're looking at powers of attorney, medically speaking, the first thing that you have to think is this person cannot make the decision themselves.
Well, hold on. A DNR is not a document. Isn't that a part of the living will?
So your DNR is really an entry on your chart. I don't know if a hospital produces a document for that.
Because I'll go back to a long time ago, had a pet, went on a trip, and I told them at the clinic where, that was taking care of the vet, I said, DNR, do not spend my money while I'm gone on that, just to be clear, because that pet was one PIA with that. But we don't do that on humans. Like, let's on grandma, just put a DNR on there. Limit the spending. No, we don't do that. And you're right. That's just kind of a medical standpoint, but it was almost sounding like we're doing a DNR document, and that's not what we're talking about here.
Sure. No. So,
and don't hate on me, pet fans. I love my dogs and great history with them.
I think you're just, you know, you're thinking about power of attorney, and that's the main thing to think about at the inception of the document is this person's only acting on your behalf if you can't do it. Every once in a while, we'll have some folks come in and say, no, I want to give power of attorney to Greg today, and he can start and do whatever he wants from here on out. That happens every once in a while. But for the most part, people want control of their own medical decisions, and the same thing goes for their own financial decisions. So that's sort of your entry barrier, if you want to think about it from that perspective.
Okay, so living will covers some of this stuff, but you need the powers of attorney for medical and financial stuff.
Yeah, ongoing decisions while you're still alive.
All right. We get that all cleared up? All right, so estate planning questions. We got the phone lines are open. Wes Blanchard's in studio. His website, wjblanchardlaw.com. See it right there on the bottom of the screen where it says wjblanchardlaw.com. So if you have a financial or estate planning question, 504-260-0995. Gregory, you got some webinars coming up this week, July 14th and 16th. That's more conveniently known as Tuesday and Thursday of this week. You're covering Social Security, wind down with Social Security again. Haven't you done some webinars in the past, or you did some workshops in the past, Wes? It might be time to get one of those going in the little lunch and learned or the webinar rotation we got going.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wes and I ought to do one together on there. Wind down with estate planning. Hey, it's another reason to have a glass of red wine. Yeah. Huh?
Why can't we have beer down with estate planning, right?
Yeah.
Beer down? It sounds whatever a little more classy. Yeah.
Bourbon down with estate planning? Maybe wine does sound better.
But Social Security is the number one topic on the show. Everybody has to make decisions regarding that at some point. So it's worth signing up for. How did they get there?
GregoryRicks.com. There's a webinar tab at the top. So Tuesday at 5:30 p.m., Thursday at 6 p.m., whichever one fits your schedule better, go to the website, sign up for it. When we come back, more with estate planning attorney Wes Blanchard. I'm James Parker. We're winning at life with Gregory Ricks.
We've kind of been on this document thing in the living will, but that's just a small part of what you're needing. And I can give you a personal situation, and sometimes I share intimate details of family, but my mom died a bit more than a year ago. And one of my sisters kind of was the lead, and I would back her up decisions, and she and I think really the same. And then another sister is a little off the beaten path from us. And if anything, she'd like to disagree on things. And mom was in a hospice center on the wind down. And I remember discussion, and we were always kind of concerned that when we're doing something and making family decisions, that one's going to give pushback or go the different way. And I remember in the hospice, we're sitting there and a discussion comes up on the side, and the one sister on off the beaten path has a different thinking on how it's going to go. And I'm not going to give into detail what it was, but I said, I don't think this is going to go that way. And then she says something, and I lean in and I said, this is not going to go how you think it's going to go then. And my other sister, a little bit later, she said, you know, you could have handled that a lot better. I said, yeah, she pushed, so I pushed back. But what I did is bringing everybody together to talk about it. I said, we need to take a ride and go have that discussion away from here. And we went and had a discussion, and I gave my thoughts to why. And basically it come down to is why. And actually, my other sister started leaning towards that sister. And I said, why are y'all making a decision that way? What is, and this was going to be something where they're making a decision because they felt something. And my thing was, let's do the right thing. Because if you do that and later says, oh my gosh, I regret we did that, I would rather err on the side of following mom's wishes. Because if you have regret, you know, at least it's not something oh my gosh, I wish we could undo that decision. And actually, we went and had the discussion, and everybody came to a solid agreement and leaned towards what mom was wanting. And I thank them for listening and talking about it and what I did at the end, because we all came in agreement, and it was a positive, positive decision there, so that if you had regret, it's not a regret that's going to hurt you because you can't undo it later after they've died. And I just said, you know what? We did a lot of good here today, because I wanted them to be in a good place with a good decision that's something they wouldn't regret later. And it is something that wasn't documented, could have been, should have been, but it was put on us to make a decision, and everybody wasn't on the same page. But I was one for bringing everybody together. And why I did that pushback, this was not a decision that they would probably be happy about a few years later when they get to thinking about it and all this passes on what was going on. So I and that's where I come back to, I'd rather the family get along at the end of the day. And that's one reason I think these documents are important, Wes.
Yeah, it does a really good job of avoiding the predicament that you were in, where you're having this battle between the emotional versus the practical decision. And that's a tough battle. And sometimes they don't resolve in a matter of a car ride. Sometimes it takes a long, long time for that to.
Well, it wasn't just a car ride. We went somebody, open air, park, sit down, had a conversation, and we got to a great place. And that's what I was wanting, is everybody to be happy and have a great decision made.
Was there some documents that could have streamlined that a little bit or left some of the variables a little more solved? Because it sounds like some stuff was up in the air in your situation.
Well, yeah, some documents weren't done that I kept asking to be done, and it didn't happen. And, you know, and mom's part of that was part of that problem in doing so. And when it came to me, and it wasn't on my part, it was just, it's about decisions, you know, of where to be buried, where's the plot positioning, how to handle end of life health decisions and such like that. And she had complications also. I put out there that she had a relationship. She wasn't going to remarry, but she had a relationship. And in retrospect, if she had remarried, because we also, that relationship, that guy had some daughters that were intervening, and we had to put a stop to it. And I told my sister later, I said, imagine if mom had remarried, we would have lost total control of everything of our mom, because the spouse's family would have control. A lot of people don't necessarily realize, and that creates a lot of rifts there in that case. But, and was asking for those documents to be done, and they, all of that was not done. Now, from my thing, and you said, well, Greg, why didn't you have it done? Well, I live in another city, and the lead sister, or actually both sisters, live in the community where mom lived. And my standpoint is, and I've talked about this on air before, is, you know, I had a discussion with mom, like when she was told that she had cancer, she had place on her lung and a place in her brain. And there was a discussion one day. She says, well, what do you want? I said, mom, I don't want anything. I said, there's not anything I want. But later I had a conversation with Susan, because mom and I discussed recipes and cookbooks and stuff. I said, Susan, when she dies, make sure those cookbooks are sealed in plastic bags and preserved there, and all those recipes and stuff. I said, and I didn't ask for them on them. I've not seen it since, but Susan said they're preserved. But that's just the way I was. I didn't want anything. I said, give it to everybody else. I don't care about that. That's not what I'm here for. So, but I'm just telling you, that's a personal situation where I think these documents are so important.
Yeah. And look, I don't think you're alone in that. I'm sure there's some listeners or watchers, viewers, who are, you know, recalling some similar situation with that they themselves have been in, or, you know, have seen someone in that regard. And it kind of brings up an interesting point when you think about it from that perspective. Most of the folks who come in and want to do a living trust or want to get a will put in, the first thing they say is, look, I had such and such happen, or watched X, Y, and Z happen on this person's succession. And that's, I can't have that happen. So I need to get this buttoned up and make sure that this is going to hold up and be good to go whenever that time comes.
Yeah, you and I have been doing this for a long time. We've seen situations where families are suing each other or suing the surviving parent. It's none of that stuff should happen. Just shouldn't happen.
Let's do Walter in Gulfport. You're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Walter?
Yes, sir. Well, I'm in a situation, like my mother passed away. You were just saying this on a radio show, and that's what clicked. You said something about what you did with your mother. My mother just passed away about a year ago. And then my brother is executive state. He took control of everything. You've got to excuse me. I got lawyers for you, please.
Hang on a second. We'll continue this call on the other side of the break. But Walter has an estate planning issue for Wes Blanchard, our estate planning buddy. next to us.
Yes, yeah, okay. No, good morning to you guys.
All right, so so here's what we
caught. My call, by the way.
Yeah, so here's what we caught so far. Your brother's the executor of a will?
Yes, sir.
And is
and my mother just passed away. Okay. Mr. Rich was just saying something. He had the same similar situation, but, you know, we're not still And the thing is, I don't need nothing. It's only the principle of what's happening, what my brother's doing. My brother's doing a big portfolio of his wealth. And what he's doing, he said he bought my mother's house. I went to the St. Tammany Courthouse. There did not know such thing happened like that. And then I was drinking a little too much wine one day when I signed some papers. And what happened, I was making a second mortgage to my mother's home, and that's like 10, 15 years ago, maybe. And so what's happened, he's executive state, he's a power attorney. And then it's a weird way what happened. He pulled the plug on my mother too quick, too soon. You know, it was at the Slidell Memorial Hospital. And anyway, it just happened too quick. And I don't know, my brother's stressing out because of the school virus. Nobody's paying him rent. He's got businesses, and they defunct, and, you know. So I don't know. I'm asking you, what kind of rights do I have? Do I have to go get an attorney?
So your rights really flow from the estate and being an heir, right? And when you look at that in comparison with the authority that your brother's exercising, the main thing that you need to keep in mind that whatever he's doing for the estate has got to be done in the best interest of the heirs. So, you know, it shouldn't be any circumstances of self-dealing where he's able to sort of enrich himself to the detriment of the other heirs. But also, you know, keeping in mind the times that we are living in, that can make things very difficult. I don't know, you know, given your circumstances where whether you necessarily need legal help, I don't really know what sort of inheritance rights you have based on, you know, the situation. But I think that's the guiding principle that you should keep in mind is, you know, is he doing what's in the best interest of all the heirs?
Because you know what? And another thing is, you know, my mother would never let me out of a will. And my brother said, I'm not on a will. And, excuse me, and because I was a favorite, I went to the best schools money could buy. I went to the best schools in New Orleans. It just hurts my heart. Oh, my mother never left me in a will. I don't care. I don't need it. But the point, excuse me.
Yep. You know, Walter, don't feel bad. Some of us have gone through it. And even if we haven't, we know someone almost in our immediate circle that's gone through something similar. I've got relatives.
I want them to have. I don't need nothing. That's the whole point. It's the principle. And I think I need to get. I'm sorry. I'm gonna be a crybaby.
No, that's all right, Walter. Listen. If you need some legal help cleaning this up, wjblanchardlaw.com or Wes. What's your phone number?
It's 504-500-1756.
We'll see what we can do for you, Walter. It happens, Walter. We're all humans. Just give us a call on Monday. We'll see if we can help you out any way we can. Let's do Debbie and Metairie. Hey, Debbie, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks, talking to James, Gregory, and Wes. How can we help you?
Well, I'm curious of whether we have to have a lawyer or anything to write up these documents, or if it's something that we could do personally ourselves, you know, I mean. If I wanted to write a power of attorney, could I do that without having to hire an attorney?
Oh, Wes.
Could I just get it? Can I have it signed and then notarized or something? I mean, whether it's my will or my power of attorney or.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of options, right? But I mean, I always say it the simple way is, you know, you kind of get what you pay for. When it comes to a power of attorney, you know, you definitely need to make sure that you have it notarized. That's going to be how it becomes valid. But I also will tell you for the most part that if you're just seeing a simple notary, he or she may, you know, be very cautious about giving you advice about the legality of what you've drafted up. And then as far as the will goes, keep in mind, you can definitely always handwrite your own will, but it's got to be in your own handwriting. You got to sign, you got to date it. I would just caution you to keep it very basic and not sort of involve legal terms that you may or may not know, you know, the true legal effect of. Sometimes it sounds like a good idea, but there's a trap door that can kind of pop in there Usufruct is a term that I would not throw around loosely, for instance. But again, yeah, you know, just keep in mind it's not meant to be something that's supposed to be a financial burden, but, you know, it does have permanent effects once it's done through succession. So be careful.
Okay. Well, the most important issue was over the power of attorney. I mean, you know, whether I can have somebody come in and see me at the hospital and make medical decisions. I mean, I might want my daughter-in-law to do it.
These aren't expensive documents, though, Wes.
My son would freak out. I don't think he wants to make those decisions, you know?
No, look, I've seen that. I've got a good friend of mine who has that exact scenario where his mother actually appointed the daughter-in-law to make some of these decisions. And the idea behind it was that, hey, we know the two sons that I have, they love each other, but man, they don't think alike. And so we have to have somebody who's got a medical background and who can make a sound decision when the time comes.
Okay, can I ask just add to this a little bit? I mean, there's something I don't understand, like about with a DNR, if it's no intubation, but I mean, do you have to be specific? For example, my sister has cancer right now, and she's afraid that if she got COVID, they would send her to the emergency room and they'd immediately put a thing down her. And I said, no, if you have a DNR, it's a DNR.
I don't know sort of how that would be interpreted. I mean, obviously the language is important there, but, you know, those are medical decisions made by medical professionals. I think they're going to be very careful to do what they think needs to be done to keep the patient alive.
I'll tell you, I also think this is the doctors can make decisions and do things even though a family member might have a document, and the family member can take that document and make other decisions. I'd say it's a strong guide, but in the heat of dealing with somebody's life, decisions have to be made, and they're going to err on the side of saving that person.
Right.
That.
Well, unfortunately, that, yes.
Thank you for the call and listening. Most companies do not outperform 30-day treasury. So I've got a stat for you here.
You mean the company stocks don't perform?
Yeah, company stocks. Most do not outperform 30-day treasuries. Speaking from a historical look back. Now, I've got a stat for you here from the globaleconomy.com. The number of publicly listed companies and what that describes as companies that are traded on an exchange. There was a peak of 8,090 companies listed on exchanges in 1996. Today, they're saying that number is $4,397. Now, when I talk about we're all buying from a pool, it used to be U.S. focused because the stock market is in the U.S. is the most important, but that was most bought. And now we have the global world buying our securities. We have central banks buying our stocks as well. Like the Bank of Japan's one of the largest holders of the NASDAQ as well. So when I talk about we're all drawing from a small pool, we've got what's that number again? 4,397 stocks listed on exchanges. Less than 1,000 companies make up market capitalization, which is somewhere a little above $30 trillion. So less than 1,000 companies make up 97% of market cap. So then you get down to what is half of market cap? It's about $15 trillion. Less than 100 companies make up that. An example, one company makes up $1 trillion of that. What's their name? Amazon. We're all buying from a small pool globally. There's just over, what's my number again?
4,300 stocks?
Yeah, small pool. And we talked about market capitalization. 97% of market cap is made up by less than 1,000 companies. But then we get down to what's half of market cap? It's made up of less than 100 companies. That's $15 trillion. So I can give you an example of $4 trillion of that. It's called Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, and a newest member, Google. That's $4 trillion plus right there.
How old is this info? Because we found out today Amazon's worth $1.5 trillion.
Well, that information's July 5th. But you got one trailing behind them at $665 billion. Facebook's likely to become the next one sometime in the future. If they stay on course of success, it can be fleeting, but I don't think they're going anywhere. But that, there's four companies that make up over $4 trillion. Probably if we ran the numbers, they probably make up more like $5 trillion of that $15 trillion of market cap.
Right.
So then you've got the other companies that share in that 100. So we could probably shrink that down. But just to give you an idea, half of market cap is made up by less than 100 companies. So that understands why investing is important there. And I talk to people about you're going to go out and pick stocks and make good decisions there. You know, so yeah, I want to get me some of that Microsoft, Amazon, Google. Have you looked at the share prices? What's that going to cost you? Are you've got enough money to save every month and buy shares in those? No, you don't.
Four figures just to get one share? Heck no.
Yeah, that makes it very tough. That makes it tough to get diversified as well from the share price standpoint. Then what we found is, because you've got to have diversification, it's hard to buy these really high-priced shares there as well. Tesla is an example of that on something that was maybe somewhat affordable a year ago, is over $1,500 a share right now. And none of these are being mentioned as something to go buy or consider. We're just giving an example of prices. But what we have found when we look at historicals, indexed investing outperforms stock picking. It skews a higher return because it gives you diversification. It gives you the momentum stocks and weighting, and it makes selection easier for you. And that should be one of your asset classes of several to make sure you get proper blending to have success going forward.
Have you heard of Price's Law? Now, I know Gregory's heard of it because I've talked about it on the show before, but you, the guy listening, have you heard of Price's Law? It was a few years ago, but when Gregory was talking about how just a small number of stocks make up half the market cap, that sounded like Price's Law from, what was that, 2018 or something when we did that show. And what that says, this guy had noticed that any business he worked at, there was just a small handful of people that did most of the work. And so when he started jumbling the numbers around, his law, and this is a soft law, says that 50% of the work done by any company is done by the square root of the number of employees. So you look at a sales staff, take a giant sales staff. And if you have, let's say, 81 people on the sales staff, that means nine of your account executives are probably doing half of the revenue. And in my estimation, that's been generally correct, Gregory. And I think that would apply to stocks. If how many stocks are out there? A little over 4,000. So you want to do some quick math on whatever the square root of 4,000 is, and then say, is that number of stocks making up a half a market cap? I bet it would be pretty close. Now, so another one of these things from the same show was the Pareto principle. And this was another sociologist from Italy from way back in the day. But he said said almost kind of the opposite, where it doesn't matter what resource you're distributing, most of it is going to go to the top, like half of it's going to go to about the top 10%. So he didn't use square root, he used 10%. And if you use that, like if you look at the NBA, the top 10 scorers probably scored about half the points in the NBA. So it's one of these things where stocks are in this mix. You know, the top 10 stocks, I bet you that's where more than half the trades are going on any given day. I bet you it's pretty close to the top half of the market cap as well. Again, these are soft laws, just a couple of things that we've talked about on previous shows that came to mind when Gregory was talking about the dwindling number of stocks and we're all picking from the same pool. We really are, and there's a lot of math behind that. Dunkin' Donuts said they're closing 450 stores permanently by the end of 2020. Did you see this headline? Because it's not as bad as it sounds. You would think any business closing 450 branches, that's a sign that they're just circling the drain, they're on their way out.
But aren't they reshaping the company doing more smaller kiosk type stores?
The reason these 450 are closing is because they had a long-standing partnership with the Speedway gas stations.
Oh.
That fell apart. And so that partnership with the parent company called Hess is now done. And so the gas station said, we're just going to convert these. We'll try and sell these little kiosks in these gas stations to someone else. Dunkin's not actually hurting that bad. Dunkin' has one of those businesses where a lot of it's drive-through, and the little bit that's not drive-through is takeout. There's not a whole lot of people hanging out at Dunkin' Donuts. So out of so many businesses that took a bath over the last 3 months, they actually haven't done that bad. This was a pretty misleading headline when I read the story, and I was glad for it.
I think takeout capabilities will be looked at. It will be more important part of most businesses going forward. Even if you're just a retail store, how can you do curbside pickup? You know, or, you know, order it online and come by and they bring it out to you, or have a section, just walk in and get it. Best Buy is an example of that. I went and picked up something recently there, and I kind of like that. I've been several times and bought online, but just go by there and get that. Then I went to another store and I wanted to go in and look around, and I did. So I walk up to the window inside, whereas, online orders pick up the way it used to work. And I was there and they said, I'm sorry, you can't get the item at this window. It's all curbside outside. I said, oh, I didn't realize that I had to do it only outside. Yeah, it's outside. So go out there, and they've got the numbered parking spots to pull up there. And so I go on my app and it says, what are you driving? And I'm on foot.
Right.
Because I parked the vehicle elsewhere. Because I wanted to go in and look around.
You're like, I'm driving some 2019 Skechers.
So it says, what are you driving? And then what I did was type in blue shirt. So there I just go. Stood there in that area. Next thing I know, somebody walks up to me and says, what are you picking up?
Look at you working the system. This is great. Let's do Rick and Slidell. You're next up on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Rick?
Hi. I have two scenarios as part of this question about waiting to 70 before turning on Social Security. And that is, okay, so you work full-time to 70 and then turn on Social Security. That's the first scenario. And the second is you work full-time to full retirement age, and then you spend some savings buffer money, meaning you have very little income during the next 4 or 5 years before you turn on Social Security at 70. Now, I understand that if you wait, Social Security benefits grow by something like 8%. I might have that wrong, but about 8% per year between full retirement age and 70, assuming that you're still working. But my question is, would your benefits grow at a smaller rate if you are not working between FRA and 70 than if you were working between FRA and 70?
Okay, so here's what's going on. 8% simple interest if you're deferring beyond FRA to age 70. That's without working. It's going to grow at 8% simple interest. So if you're still working, you're probably replacing lower paid years, because remember, it's also your best 35. So most cases working, you can't hurt your system. You can only improve it. You can't make Social Security worse. You can only make it better. Working would more likely make it better instead of staying the same. So you're actually increasing your percentage slightly by working and deferring.
So then that kind of leads to the next sort of, it's not really a question, but it seems like it would make sense to put aside money to live on during that period when you can turn on Social Security and when you then when you have to turn on Social Security benefits.
Yeah,
which is kind of what I've...
There's a number of factors in there, and kind of what you're referring to is something I call a bridge, or a Social Security bridge. When you kind of look, are you married? How's your health? What's your other income sources? How does that correlate to assets that are generating income? And if it does make sense in the grand scheme, at least for the primary worker, the one with the largest wages, which would be the largest Social Security benefit, to defer and everything work out. Sometimes you might look at what is a block of money where you bridge that gap to defer. where you're not in a situation, oh, I need the money, I've got to turn it on. You need everything kicked on to make a go of it. But sometimes that bridge happens. Sometimes it's better for a spouse to turn it on earlier. But one thing about it, by you deferring, if you're head of household, primary worker in the family, you're creating a larger benefit that you're also leaving behind that's going to go possibly beyond your life, Rick.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'd like to make a comment. Your program, I really enjoy listening to it. Your program helps to ground me. There's some personal, like real life there. It's not just an infomercial, and you guys have a good dynamic on the air, and I really enjoy listening to you. And then I was listening earlier, and when somebody made a comment about being left out of a will, and I'd just like to say that it occurred to me that and this is a guy who was really upset about it, but that probably was an oversight, or it could have been an oversight. You know, you do something at a certain point in your life, you don't realize what you're leaving out. It's an unintended consequence of your action at that moment because of circumstances at the time. So for whatever reason that you didn't get treated the same in the will, just remember that you still had a relationship with your mother in spite of the fact or in spite of the lack of consideration after she's gone. Thank you for letting me comment on your program.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. You know, we did talk about that for a few minutes, probably when we went to break after that or when that hour was finished. And for the listeners, we had a call. We're on the air 3 hours on Saturday, so we're wrapping up the third hour and we're kind of done for the weekend. Monday night, we'll be back on at 7. And you can pick up more of the show by going to GregoryRicks.com at the media tab and the Winning at Life app for more information on picking up podcast streaming and such on the show. But it was in the back end of last hour that mm-hmm. that caller was regarding. We talked a great deal about estate planning, having a power of attorneys, and more importantly, the focus was living wills. But this was a caller that left a situation kind of upset and was kind of left out of the will. Now, one thing, and what we did kind of allude to as well is, I also have a belief that you shouldn't live your life based on inheriting something and letting that impact your relationship as well. Because I kind of shared some personal stories in that hour as well, that my sisters and I came to making some great decisions working together where we weren't necessarily on the same page, but I think it was better decisions that made everybody feel better longer range about. And this wasn't about being equal or anything. And I would rather, if it came down to it, my sisters could have everything versus me getting anything. And I didn't want anything except access to the cookbooks. That's just kind of my thing. And make sure they're happy. And you know, everybody feels slighted for some reason, I guess. There's always a little bit of it there, but I don't feel slighted in any way because we had clarity on those discussions. And Rick is right. Relationships should be front and foremost with everybody. And that's one reason I always talk about doing documents, having a will, power of attorney, living, because what you want to leave behind is your kids, your family, getting along, not fighting over your stuff. Have them mad at you about how you did it, not mad at each other. Think about that.
Well, one thing I liked about Rick's call, can I just squeeze this in there?
Yeah.
Rick might like that. I bet you he's still listening. It's interesting that he's trying to make that jump to age 70 without work and how you're going to pay the bills in the meantime. Usually we hear about that gap. If you're going to turn on Medicare at 65, and you want to retire before that, how do you make the jump? How do you cover those costs until you can get your health care covered?
Yeah,
there's a couple little holes like
when
that.
When you're kind of looking at this, and he brought up about the bridge, using a block of money that may sustain you until you turn on Social Security. So a couple ways to look at that. What's the impact on assets if we lean on them and defer Social Security? You know, does that make the assets go down? And does Social Security turning on and creating a larger error-free income make up for that? Or if you're spinning a block, does that provide a better, and using that bridge, not necessarily just defining where assets are, but maybe a block of money that you take and spend, its impact on income is small compared to what Social Security turns on. So you this is where we run calculations, formulas. We, you know, big part of our guided planning system we do at my firm is income planning, and Social Security is crucial. Most people have decisions to make on that. All people don't make good decisions, but what we try to help you get to is making good financial decisions.
A couple webinars are going to be covering the same topic there. Wind Down with Social Security is happening this week. Gregory's going to be hosting a little online presentation where we're mixing two of his favorite hobbies, wine and financial planning. And you're going to learn, this is a fun way to learn the rules of Social Security. No one else is out there teaching you that I can see. I didn't see any commercials this weekend for Social Security webinars or schools or adult education courses or anything like that. So GregoryRicks.com, go to the webinars tab and you got to sign up for either one. What happens is once you sign up, they'll send you an email before the webinar starts. You click it, it pops up right there in your browser. And you can either join Gregory with a bottle of wine or a bottle of Capri Sun. I don't care. But you will learn about the Social Security rules in a fun little setting. GregoryRicks.com. And if you need a financial advisor, start your search with my buddy, GregoryRicks.com, or call the office 504-832-9200. Gregory, let's do this again next week.
Yeah, let's see you next week. Join us.
Have a good one. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual's situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Roth conversion is a taxable event and may have several tax-related consequences. Be sure to consult with a qualified tax advisor before making any decisions regarding your IRA. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.